Alone and rejected from their families and or caretakers, LGBTQ youth are forced to live in the streets or homeless shelters. I am your host, Daniela Rubio, and today in episode 16 of the Buzzing Hornet News, I'll be informing you guys on the correlation between LGBTQ and homelessness. In this podcast, you'll hear a summary of an article by the Washington Post, how LGBTQ youth are treated in welfare systems and how that can lead to homelessness, and real-life stories of LGBTQ youth who have experienced homelessness due to their identities and or sexual preferences. You will also learn what we can do to help the cause. I've been told I should go find myself again. You're taking my soul, everything I own, poison in my head. We fall down the moon, we keep trying, leaving us with scars. I've been told I should go and find myself again. According to the Washington Post, out of the 1.6 million young people who experience homelessness in the U.S., 40% identify as LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer. A study done by Williams Institute shows that 46% of homeless LGBTQ youths ran away because of family rejection of their sexual orientation or gender identity. 43% were forced out by parents, and 32% faced physical, emotional, or sexual abuse at home. How could a parent reject their child, you may ask? Well, there are many reasons parents react this way. One would be they are religious and their beliefs go against it. Two, they fear being looked down by their peers. Or three, they hope by kicking them out, they return fixed. The story of Marcus Pizer and his parents, Penny and Chuck, is discussed in the Washington Post. They tell of their journey to the acceptance of their transgender son. They describe it as a loss of one child who they knew to another. Marcus was born a girl, but identified as a boy, and his family deals through his transition in different ways through therapy. Although this story may have a happy ending, there are more to tell that do not. Aware of this, Marcus and his parents founded a nonprofit foundation called Safe Harbor for Trans Teens. They support members of the LGBTQ community and shelter them when homeless. While reading Child Welfare System and LGBTQ Youth Homelessness, Gender Segregation, Instability, and Intersectionality by Brandon Andrew Robinson, we learned that youth detailed incidents of gender segregation, stigmatization, isolation, and institutionalization in child welfare systems are linked to their gender expression and sexuality, which often intersected with being a youth of color. The youth described these incidents as contributing to multiple placements and shaping why they experience homelessness. Youth who are transgender and or gender expansive tend to have a more difficult time. They tend to be harassed by caretaker service providers and their fellow peers. Racial profiling and racism shapes how they're monitored and disciplined. In foster homes, foster parents' heterosexual beliefs make it hard for the youth to find a safe home. Foster parents fear a member of the LGBTQ community may influence other children in their household. Several have been isolated due to their identities and sexuality. Some foster parents are known to force their gender norm beliefs, therefore not allowing them to express themselves otherwise. Several youths have been placed in residential treatment centers in hopes of curing them. When they become too old to remain in child protective services, some are placed in homeless shelters. Some people in the foster homes choose to run away due to how poorly they're treated. Melissa Moore gives a touching TED Talk as she discusses the LGBTQ youth she has encountered as a part of a LGBTQ organization that welcomes them. We hear the stories of three young LGBTQ members, Sean, Charles, and Mila. Now we will hear Melissa Moore recall their stories.
I answered, I heard this scared kid, and he said, "My name is Sean. My dad kicked me out because I'm gay and I don't know anyone. Please don't hang up on me." So I listened patiently as Sean told me his story, which unfortunately was not unique to me. On his 18th birthday, Sean's dad said, "No son of mine is going to be like that and live in this house, so pack your bags." He drove Sean down to Charleston from Delaware so that he could be homeless in a warm climate. He said it was because he loved him. So Sean still had a whole year left of high school, if that puts it into context for you. But here he was abandoned, and he's freezing, and he's terrified of the older guys who were calling him the F word. You know the one, it rhymes with maggot. And I could hear them threatening to kick his ass in the background. And at that point, I was no longer annoyed at getting a work call on a holiday. Because for me, I was still having fun hanging out with my friends and with my family. For Sean, it was the harsh realization that he no longer had a family. He was in a place where he didn't have even one friend.
We are now going to listen to Charles and Mila's story.
Charles, he's a transgender guy. And when he was 14, he got locked up in the juvenile justice system. After he served his time, we looked around the entire state and tried to find a group home that would take them, but none of the homes would take him because of his gender identity. So he got placed in a psychiatric ward, and while he was there, he was put in isolation, and he just sat there in a holding pattern, just waiting for a home. Both of these institutions have a history of isolating LGBTQ youth, and they say it's for their own protection. But forced isolation is the severest form of punishment. I remember this bright and bubbly teenager named Mila. Her family sent her to an ex-gay ministry, ex-gay conversion camp, when they found out she was transgender. If you've never heard of ex-gay conversion therapy or reparative therapy, it's based on the premise that being LGBTQ is some form of defect that needs to be fixed, or it's some kind of disease that needs a cure. You may have heard of some of the things they used to do, like inducing vomiting or inflicting pain or some kind of negative stimulus after showing a person homoerotic images, or using shame in an attempt to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. At best, these programs don't work. But at their worst, they cause irreparable damage to a person's psyche. And when Mila was going through it, she was conditioned to hate herself, so she ran away from that place. But she could never run away from who she was. She ended up in a cycle of hunger and homelessness and survival sex, and then she became addicted to drugs just to get through the day and be able to make it. So many of the things that are done to LGBTQ young people in the name of loving them, in the name of helping them or healing them or delivering therapy to them or protecting them are actually punishments.
There are many things we can do to help this social issue. Melissa Moore had some suggestions, including ending conversion therapy in all its forms, listening to the youth's needs and protecting them, and shaping public policies to the young people's ideas since they're directly affected by it. 40% of young homeless people are LGBTQ, and even in child protective services, they're not treated properly. We can make a change. That is all we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. See you all next time in Buzzing Hornet News.